Accession number 18622, Reel 4.
Jim Brand, Reel 4.
And after the army had worked its way further east, we were eventually sent over to East London, Southwest India docks, and we started running a convoy, almost a bus run really, from the eastern end, from the East India docks over to Belgium. The whole thing was so organized. There were boys that marked the fairway out into the sea, out into the North Sea, and we just followed that. And it was almost like a bus run. We'd go across to Belgium and unload. There was the harbour there at Ostend was more than suitable for what we wanted. The Germans weren't very far east of Ostend at that time, but by that time the people had settled down and they were beginning to realise that they were gone. I didn't spend very much time ashore there. We didn't have much chance to spend any time ashore there. We would unload and then go back for some more. But on one occasion, we formed up just off the end of Southend Pier for a convoy at night. We left following the line of boys, and I think there were about 7 or 8 LSTs in this particular convoy. And of course we had a very, very rudimentary radar system at that time, which was called radio location. We could pick up the boys on this rudimentary radar system. They showed up on the scan, and we used to follow the line of boys. Anyway, we were leading as we were used to, and as the last ship in line, as you asked, last LST in line went past one of these boys, an E-boat was tied up to the boy, and it let go and put a couple of tin fish into the LST and shut off into the night. I mean, it didn't, which the LST had to cripple back into harbour, of course. It didn't sink it, but it killed a lot of people down below and things like that.
Which LST was that?
I can't remember which one it was. I can't remember. Because at that time, we really didn't know who we were in company with half the time. I mean, it was just like you going to work in the morning. You know, this thing was so regular as far as a run across to Ostend was concerned. But then we were called out one particular day to sent over to Ostend in a hurry. And we went over there, and it was just after the bridge too far, where the troops had been trying to capture the bridge up at Nijmegen. And the Germans had recaptured the bridge, and the support troops on the flanks of each side of this thing were brought back to Ostend, and they must have had a terrible time. They were brought down the jetty at dead of night and put on board the LST, and we bedded them down for the night to take them back to UK. Them poor chaps had a rough trip. But anyway, on another occasion we went over, and the jetties there were made of big blocks of timber, about a foot, maybe a 15 inches square, great big box of timber. And on this occasion, it was blowing a gale when we arrived over there. And as we went in, the wind took us, and instead of taking us up against the jetty we wanted to go to, there were 3 jetties. We missed that jetty, and it forced us over onto the other one. but it was such a hit with such force that one of these things came straight through the ship's side. It did a hell of a lot of damage to the ship, but we also smashed up the propellers at the same time. We finished up with one blade on one propeller and two on the other, so we couldn't go to sea. And they had to send a tug over from England to tow us back. We were put into West India dock, to have some new screws fitted and to weld up the hole in the side. As I said, it became a routine run almost. Everybody sort of settled down into it. We thought the war was practically over, of course. And then we had a shock because one of the LSTs was actually sunk by E-boats just outside Ostend. And my friend Bill Chalk was a stoker on board that particular LST. It was filled with RAF signal group. All the equipment, the vehicles, officers and men attached to this signal group were all on this LST, and the ship was sunk completely. Most of them were lost. Bill himself was saved and brought back to England, but nearly everybody was drowned off that LST. I don't think there were any survivors as far as the RAF were concerned, and very few of the ship's company. But Bill was one, thank goodness, and he is now the vice president of the LST and Landing Craft Association. Funnily enough, his wife that he met afterwards, he didn't realize it until after they got married. Her father was an RAF officer that was killed on that LST that Bill was on. That's Margaret. And it's one of those long arms of coincidence. This went on for some time, as I said, and then eventually, of course, we were taken off that run completely, and then the war finished. We were loaded up with stores. We were actually in the West India dock where we'd unloaded the day before VE Day. We thought perhaps they might leave us there over, you know, and stay for the VE celebration, but nothing like that happened. We still found ourselves anchored off, filled up, and anchored off the end of Southend Pier, and ready to go on another trip. I believe it was that trip we made. We went across to Stavanger in Norway, because Stavanger, the Germans had packed it in over there by then. And we were running foodstuffs and that across to Stavanger in Norway. One of the trips across there, and I think it was the first, the weather was atrocious. And it was so bad. And the ship was being tossed around so much that a sergeant, army sergeant that was taking passage with this lot of stuff that we were taking over to Norway, actually died of seasickness. The sick berth attendant, McCulloch, had to deal with him. We put him in one of the magazines until such time as we could put him ashore.
How can you die of seasickness?
He did. Whether he was so sick that he had a heart attack, I don't know. But he was very violently ill with seasickness, and it actually killed him. Funnily enough, at one of our reunions, LST and Landing Craft reunions, I was talking about it to somebody, and this chap actually knew the sergeant that I meant, but I can't remember the sergeant's name now. He actually knew this sergeant while he was still alive. And he knew what I said was correct, that he died at sea on this LST, on this LST 319. We changed captains just about D-Day, Captain, well, of course he was Commander Jackie Sutton, who incidentally was a personal friend of Lord Louis Mountbatten's, left the ship and went up and took charge of the base up in, up near Liverpool. And he was promoted to captain on the retired list. And we had a new captain, a Lieutenant Commander Campbell, I think it was. Lieutenant Commander Campbell. And he stayed with the ship then right until the end. And we eventually, having done several trips across to Norway, I was actually in Oslo the day that King Haakon returned in one of our cruisers from England. And we saw him come ashore. That was a big day. But the poor Norwegians, they'd had a hard war. Food situation in Norway was dreadful. They weren't starving, don't make any mistake. They weren't starving. But they'd had no... There were no luxuries in life in Norway, believe me. None at all during the war. They had a really hard war. And, of course, as you all know, anybody that had anything to do with the Norwegian seamen and sailors, they were a very, very dedicated and hard lot of sailors. They were so anti-German, it wasn't true. But there you are. Anyway, we ran backwards and forwards then, as I said, for a while. We kept running over to Norway, and then eventually we were taken out of the run and sent to Liverpool for a refit. The idea being that we would be refitted and then be sent out to the Far East to, you know, to carry on the war out there. Quite a lot of the LSTs had already been sent. They'd been stopped taking off the runs earlier, refitted, and they'd already gone. Some of the newer LSTs had gone straight out there. By the end of the... Well, we actually had some Canadian-built and British-built LSTs as well. They were steam-driven. Rather than the diesel electrics that we were using, they were steam-driven. But they all had a number 3,000 and something. A lot of them went out to the Far East. But we, as I said, we refitted in Liverpool with the idea in mind that we would. The war had finished by then. The war was over in Europe. And then the next thing we knew, of course, the war finished in Japan while we were still refitting. So we didn't. They didn't send my ship back to out to the Far East at all, the LSD. We then took her back to New York because the ship was on lend lease or lease lend. And we took her back to New York and gave her back to the Americans. We went into New York Harbor. We run all the stores down as much as we possibly could. I still had some left, and there was a British ship in the harbor there. We got some transport and we... Because you weren't allowed to land any foodstuffs in America, it was against their laws for anything to, any foodstuffs to be brought in from outside. So we had to transfer all the foodstuffs we had on board to a British ship, which we were lucky enough to have it handy at the time. But then, of course, we had rum in the rum store. I think there was about 3 8-gallon casks of it still left. And... when the American authorities heard that we had rum in the rum store, they said, right, well, they wanted it brought on deck. They brought it on deck and stove the end of the rum cask in with fire axes and poured it over the side. I think that was the worst act of criminal act I saw all the war. Couldn't believe that. That really shook me. Anyway, within about 48 hours of us getting over there, we would turn the ship over. The ship was empty. We left there, and quite a lot of the lads were sent down to come back home on the Queen Mary that was running backwards and forwards as a trooper. And I thought I might be one of them, but instead of that, they shanghaied me across to Vancouver by train, went right across Canada by rail over to Canada and commissioned a ship over there. HMS Cape Wrath. She was one of these ships that was being built for the British Navy by the Canadians to act as an entertainment ship. They had a big theater built into the ship. There was a brewery on board. They had their own concert parties and things like that. And the ships used to travel around and give shows wherever they went. But anyway, I stayed on came home on the Cape Wrath. And the day the ship arrived back in Cape Wrath arrived back in Glasgow, I left the ship and came down to Devonport for demob. Then I changed my mind. I thought to myself, well, I've seen it all during the war. I'd like to see a little bit of the world in peacetime. So I signed on to do 12 years.